Republicans.
Democrats and war hawks reach for ever higher heights of anti-Russian hysteria, ascribing near superpowers to Moscow and its president, Vladimir Putin. All this is deja vu for many older Americans who remember the Cold War days when Russians were thought to be under every bed. In a new book, Jeremy Kuzmarov and John Marciano explore the similarities and the differences between the current anti-Russian madness and the hysteria of two generations ago. The book is titled, The Russians Are Coming Again. The first Cold War as tragedy, the second as farce. Kuzmarov explains.
The title comes from Karl Marx's famous book, The 18th Brumaire of Louis Bonaparte. He was discussing the tragedy of Napoleon and the tragedy of Louis Napoleon III in France. I think what we're seeing, a farce, the second incarnation of Napoleon was a farce. So my analysis is to kind of apply Marx to the Cold War. I mean, the first Cold War was a great tragedy. It resulted in millions of deaths, proxy wars, the diversion of our spending away from human needs. But what we're seeing now playing out is a farce, because in the first Cold War, I mean, there was some semblance or some reason at least to fear the Soviet Union given the abuses of Stalin. Although my book generally shows that, Russian threat has constantly been inflated historically. In the current era, it's just ridiculous. I mean, Vladimir Putin is popular in Russia. He's led to improvements in Russia's economy. Russia is fairly weak militarily at this time. They're claiming he's an aggressor in places like Ukraine and Syria, but if you look into these conflicts, that's kind of a ridiculous claim. So there's really no reason to fear Putin or Russia at all at this time. And all of this is just kind of manufactured hysteria. And it's really just kind of playing out as farce. We see the Democrats, who are supposed to be a party of, civil liberties and human rights, adopting McCarthyist tactics. And I think that's part of the farce. We see, one of the key people lobbying for the new Cold War is William Browder, who's the grandson of Communist Party leader Earl Browder. He became he rebelled against his family by being a hedge fund billionaire and looting Russia of money. And he has a personal vendetta against Putin, and he's spreading a lot of stories about him. So that's part of the farce as well.
Yes, back in the old Cold War, at least this was a clash between two different social systems. But both the U.S. and Russia are dominated by oligarchs today.
That's right. And there's no real base. I mean, Putin is more on the conservative end, and he's not really hostile to the West or the United States at all. He's repeatedly supported cooperation. In fact, I think in Russia, some people have been pressuring him to take a harder line. So where is the threat? I mean, the Cold War, you had an ideological clash that emerged. So some of the allegations, at least, against the, communist regime, like as far as the abuses of Stalinism, and, as far as the spying, I mean, that was greatly overinflated, the number of spies that the Russians had in the United States. And most of the spying occurred in World War II when the U.S. and Russia were allies. However, there were at least a few genuine spies like Klaus Fuchs on the Manhattan Project. So there was at least some reality behind some of the allegations.
Yes, and in fact, in Russia today, Vladimir Putin has to cope with a very strong faction in ruling circles that are called the Atlanticists, the ones who want to align Russia's future with that of Western Europe and the United States.
Well, that's correct, and I think there are also hardline elements in Russia who don't want any cooperation and want more military spending than Russia has already providing, because the Russian military budget is like one-tenth that of the United States. So there are factions in Russia kind of pressuring him to spend more on the military, to intervene more aggressively in Ukraine. And that's the irony, is that the media here is presenting this major aggressor in Ukraine. But in Russia, there are elements who want a much more stronger Russian presence there because they feel the Donbass struggle is a just one and that the Ukrainian military is oppressive and dominated by neo-Nazi factions.
Well, Victoria Nuland, Hillary Clinton's main person at the State Department on Europe, Victoria Nuland bragged that the United States dedicated $5 billion to promote a color revolution, a regime change in Ukraine.
Yeah, and I think that's at the heart of the misconception. I mean, we hear the big lie repeated over and over again, Russian aggression in Ukraine, Russian aggression in Ukraine. I think people just believe something when it's repeated over and over again, and they don't actually look into the facts. I mean, the Ukraine crisis originated because of a coup d'etat that occurred in February of 2014 that was provoked by the United States, which was trying to get neoliberal elements in power in Ukraine and pry Ukraine away from the Russian orbit. And that's what precipitated the crisis, because the peoples of Eastern Donbass were more oriented towards Russia. They're Russian speakers, and they wanted to break away from the Ukrainian military. And having read into it, actually, there was a proposal. The whole crisis could have been averted because Yanukovych, the deposed pro-Russian leader, had actually accepted a proposal that would have alleviated the crisis that was going on in Ukraine and allowed for elections to proceed. But it was rejected by the right-wing forces in Ukraine, and they forced him to flee for his life and basically orchestrated a coup d'etat. That's what triggered the conflict in Ukraine. So it's not historically accurate to blame Russia for being the aggressor. And also, the struggle in eastern Ukraine is supported by most elements of the population. So Russia can't be an aggressor, but it's just repeated over and over again. All these allegations against Russia are continuously repeated, and it's drumming up this anti-Russian hysteria.
And we should point out that it was during this period of the coup in Ukraine and the rise of Nazis in Ukraine that Hillary Clinton so famously called Vladimir Putin Hitler.
Yeah, I think that's part of the just overblown rhetoric we see that's very dangerous. And that's part of this kind of post-fact universe that's not just true among Trump supporters. Unfortunately, it's quite broad among the spectrum of elite politicians and those who support them. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, I think that rhetoric was used with regards to the seizure of Crimea. But again, Crimea, the situation there is similar to Donbass, where the population is more oriented to Russia. There's a large Russian ethnic majority there, and they voted to rejoin Russia. So there were all these claims against Putin that he was this great aggressor, and the Hitler comparisons, I think, were starting at that time. And it's very dangerous.
You were speaking of the power of repetition. In today's farcical Cold War, we see that even though there is no hard evidence that the Russians actually were the ones who filched the DNC emails, we are told by corporate media repeatedly, there is evidence and there is more evidence and here's some more evidence, when none is forthcoming.
Yeah, and I think part of the farce is the they constantly claim the intelligence community, has established that Russia hacked the election. However, when the intelligence community had the chance to present their evidence in January 2017, they presented a report. The report was a farce. Anybody who looks at the report would laugh at it because the report had no evidence. It didn't even show that there was any investigation. Half the report was an attack on RT News Network as an alleged propaganda organ of the Russian government. And there was no evidence in their own report. And they acknowledged that they had made an assessment, which is just a kind of guess because they didn't present any evidence. So the intelligence agencies themselves have not presented the evidence to convince any objective observer that that hack took place. And then the Veterans of Intelligence for Sanity group, headed by Ray McGovern, undertook their own study and hired an IBM specialist in computers. And he determined that it had to have been based in the mainland of the United States, based on the speed of the modem and communications. And so his assessment was that it was an internal leak rather than a hack. And that's never been addressed. That study by an IBM expert has never actually been addressed or mentioned in the mainstream corporate media. So something is very, very fishy here.
Certainly we are in unprecedented times with former CIA officials and members of Congress and television personalities calling the sitting president of the United States a traitor. We haven't seen anything like this since Andrew Johnson, the successor to Lincoln, who was impeached.
Yeah, I think it's part of the farce. I mean, you have basically conspiracy theories from the 1950s that were dismissed as the, you know, product of lunatic groups like the John Birch Society that accused Dwight Eisenhower of being a communist. Now you see that in the New York Times, in New Yorker Magazine, all these respectable liberal outlets, people who are supposedly respectable are adopting these far-right, what used to be far-right-wing conspiracy theories. I thought it was a travesty because I read through the transcript of the meeting and I thought it was a constructive meeting that Putin and Trump had, you know, for addressing some of the genuine issues that the two countries have to deal with. For instance, Putin was urging for the abiding by the Minsk peace protocols in Ukraine, which has a, you know, viable prospect for ending the fighting in the eastern Ukraine. So that would be something very constructive. And Putin also had various proposals. He even agreed to cooperate with the Mueller investigation if the United States would cooperate with investigations of American citizens who carried out tax evasion on Russian territory and robbed Russia of money. And I think that was actually a sensible proposal. So I think it's good that two leaders, you know, the United States has had many summits in the past with Russia, even during the heart of the Cold War. So it's just crazy that they're going crazy about this, you know, two leaders meeting when that's gone on historically and when there are a lot of important issues to address. And there's a lot of ways the two leaders could actually come together to solve some problems.
Yes, you had to read the text of the press conference in order to find out what was going on because the corporate news media did not report by and large on anything that happened in Helsinki except the Russiagate related story.
I find it totally unprofessional, and I've been watching CNN and they've just been obsessed. Like, I don't know if they call themselves legitimate media outlet, they're not engaging in journalism because they're not reporting anything. It's just 24 hours incessant attacking Trump as a Manchurian candidate and bringing on guest after guest who says the exact same thing. It's just not journalism. And they weren't covering the issues. So the American public is left completely uninformed about these important issues that two countries have to resolve, including the issue of arms reduction treaties and the need to renew the START treaty that's expiring in a couple of years. That's of vital importance for all of humanity that we have a deal in place that will regulate and limit the use of nuclear weapons. That should be at the forefront of discussion. But I think all this hysteria is undermining prospects of détente and cooperation to solve these vital matters.
Many of us thought after the brouhaha about Russiagate had gone on 6 months into 2017 that it inevitably would slow down, that the momentum of this hysteria couldn't be maintained. But instead, it's increased.
That was my thought as well. And I thought a lot of the public was seeing through it and the strategy of the Democrats was backfiring. But it's hard to tell now. I mean, I think the media has been so incessant. And yeah, the point I was saying, if you repeat the big lie enough times, you do start to believe it. There is a historical parallel for that, some ugly historical cases. One could look at World War I and the demonization of Germany that led to U.S. involvement in World War I. So unfortunately, that's what we're starting to see. I mean, I think public opinion seems to be aroused from what I've seen about this issue. It could be leading in a very scary direction and the undermining of détente at a critical time in U.S.-Russia relations.
Well, of course, powerful forces have a deep and abiding interest in keeping this hysteria going. The Democratic Party, for example, as an institution, but also the national security state, the intelligence services.
Absolutely. I think the war on terror is kind of winding down. It's lost its luster. The so-called threat of terrorism has receded. And most of the public is tired of the war in Afghanistan. You know, it's gone on for years and years. So how do you justify sustaining what appears to be about, I mean, if the official military budget is about $800 billion that Trump escalated, but the real figure is over $1 trillion. So how do you justify that? You need a new bogeyman, and they pick Putin. You know, Putin is somebody who has stood up to some extent to the West and, you know, made Russia a more stronger country, and that threatens certain U.S. interests in the region. And they've picked on him, and now they're just going with that. And they're using the media to brainwash people.
In your book, you talk about some heroes of the old Cold War. Henry Wallace, who was vice president under FDR, and Paul Robeson and W.B. Du Bois, and people like Woody Guthrie. But we don't seem to have too many heroes in this farcical Cold War.
Yeah, well, I think there are heroes like yourself. Stephen Cohen is a hero. You know, he's been speaking out. He's an academic who studied Russia for many years, and he's presented a very sensible analysis of Russia, and he's been warning about the Russian hysteria. So I think there are left progressives like Robert Parry, who unfortunately passed away, but Consortium News has provided a counterbalance to the mainstream media. Unfortunately, these kind of individuals are marginalized, so they're not very well known to the broader public. So yeah, I think we need more like celebrities to step up. You know, Woody Guthrie and Paul Robeson have backgrounds as celebrities, musicians, so they had a certain voice and stature because of that. And yeah, we need more mainstream politicians. I mean, where's Bernie Sanders on this? You know, Bernie Sanders is in some ways like the Henry Wallace of this era, very progressive politician, you know, who is leading a revolution in some sense, away from the corporate tyranny we live under. But he's been very weak on this issue, and I think some of his statements seem to play into some of the anti-Russia hysteria. So that's very disturbing, and that shows Sanders may not be of the caliber of Henry Wallace, who was, you know, a great American political leader, who unfortunately was railroaded and was a victim of McCarthyism.
Isn't the corporate media and the Democrats and the others that are behind whipping up this hysteria, aren't they in a sense fouling their own nest? They talk about threats to U.S. democratic institutions, but in fact, their hysteria is harming those institutions.
I think so. I think it's harming the integrity of the media, because the media's job is to go out and get the story, you know, talk to people, expose the public to different viewpoints, provide probing investigative journalism. They're just completely failing to do that. So they're kind of feeding into Trump's claims about fake news, and that's leading the populace just to become totally cynical and, you know, and disengaged, or to support his brand of right-wing, you know, populism. So that's very, very dangerous. And yeah, they're eroding democracy because they're leading public policy in a direction that increasingly empowers the military complex, who have destroyed effectively American democracy. I mean, we've seen a slow military coup basically take over this country, and they have so much political clout, all the money they have that they use for lobbying and to buy off politicians has effectively destroyed democracy. So this is just leading in the direction of further empowering the military and other special interests who have destroyed functioning democracy in the United States.
Yes, in this very weird period, we have black folks whose politics was considered quite left now acting like the CIA and the FBI are their champions.
Yeah, I think that's very disturbing. Well, firstly, like with the intelligence agencies, I mean, they have a history, just a very recent history of deceiving the public, like with regards to the WMDs in Iraq. So we should be very suspicious about those agencies. And yeah, those are the agencies that have created a kind of nation, you know, mass surveillance state here in the United States, and also, you know, police state to a large extent. So, you know, agencies should be not viewed as having great credibility or integrity, and are a threat to functioning democracy.
Well, is there light at the end of this very noisy, insane tunnel?
Yeah, insane is a good word. I really have found it to be insane, because when I watched it, I thought that it was, and I'm not at all a supporter of Trump, I never thought I'd even be defending him. It's just, I think that was one decent thing he did, to meet with Putin, and it was a step forward. And to see the reaction to this, I have found to be very, very disturbing, especially in some of the rhetoric that's used about a new Pearl Harbor, and treason and appeasement. You know, these are words of war and could very much lead to a war, and that's what scares me. So I think now it's important for the progressives to come together and to speak out about this, to try and educate and reach our fellow citizens to avoid a disastrous course.
That was Jeremy Kuzmarov, co-author of the new book, The Russians Are Coming.